on the Talk of Chicago and the voice of the nation, 1690 WVON.
Sherry, Sherry baby, Sherry.
Nick Show here on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. Sherry, baby. That's the Jersey Boys. I know that's not my usual theme song, but you know, with my next guest, you have to play that music if you're a Four Seasons fan, a Frankie Valli fan. And if you haven't seen Jersey Boys down at the down in the Loop, I'll still call it the Schubert Theater. I know it hasn't been Schubert Theater for years, but it's always going to be that way to me. It's kind of like Marshall Field. It's never going to be Macy's. Anyway, if you haven't seen Jersey Boys, you have until January 10th to do it. But you know what? The individual talents in the Jersey Boys, it may surprise you. These guys aren't just Jersey Boys for their entire life. They have other lives and other careers. And I have been most fascinated by one of them. I've interviewed him on my headline news show because he is a musician. Aside from, in fact, doing this Broadway show is sort of a little different for him in his career. Let me let him tell you about it. Joining me now here on the Paul Lisnick Show, Michael Cuneo. He is Tommy DeVito in the Jersey Boys. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I am doing great, sir. And how you feel about the, you know, the end of Jersey Boys in Chicago is kind of around the corner.
I'm a little forlorn. I got to say, I'm very disappointed. It's been an incredible run. You know, as you know, we've been seen by over a million people. We've done 1,000 performances here, and the city has been so warm, so welcoming. They've just rolled out the red carpet for us everywhere we've been, and you know, I'm going to not only miss that, but getting to be a part of such a zeitgeist and such an incredible show. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, yeah. Truly. Experiences like this don't come around very often when you're an actor or performer. And, you know, it's been such a blast getting to do a show like this for such ravenous audiences. And, you know, we're all really sad to be leaving. It's, we've had two great years here, so it's definitely time for us to hang up our hat and move on. But
and well,
you know,
over,
I think everybody is
well over a million people have seen the show. And Mike, let me ask you, the first of all, for you joining the show, I mean, because I remember we've talked before, I mean, the Broadway career wasn't necessarily where your life was going.
No, not at all. I'd left all of that business behind. I come from a big food and wine family, a big Italian family from the Pacific Northwest, and I had left theater about 2 years ago to pursue wine, and I have a great passion for wine, and went to school and studied that, and became a legitimate sommelier and was working successfully as a wine director in New York when this opportunity came around. And I was doing so sort of with an eye towards opening a restaurant with my brothers, who are chefs. And this call came, and it couldn't have been less expected and more out of the blue. And I, to be quite honest, I really had no intentions of going. I'd had a great time, you know, sort of dallying in theater and in film and stuff like that. But I was happy doing what I was doing. And it sort of worked out that on the day of the audition, I needed an excuse to get out of the house, and that was quite simply what it was.
So you went.
So I went, and I, you know, it's funny. I was talking about my brothers a minute ago, and the only song that I knew the words to was a song that you're actually going to play a little bit later on the show. The song that I had sung initially at my brother's wedding, called "At Last," a famous standard. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for that song, I don't think I'd even be here talking to you now. But you know, as is often the case, when you least expect something, that's exactly when it falls into your lap. And within 4 days, they had offered me the job. And, you know, like I said, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, and getting to play a role like Tommy DeVito for those listeners that have seen the show. You know, I get to be the bad guy. I get to have the most fun on stage. And, yeah, it's just been an absolute ball. And it's been a great lesson, I think, in life. We get so caught up in making plans and, you know, especially this time of year, trying to decide, you know, what you're going to do and what your life has to look like and who you have to be. And, you know, for me, having an opportunity like this where something just out of the blue came in and, you know, screwed up all of my plans. And, and I have to say, screwed them up for the best. You know, it totally reignited this passion that I have for acting and storytelling, and this experience getting to be in Chicago, getting to work with this cast has been an absolute blessing.
And by the way, unlike most shows where, you know, maybe a director casts you or however that happens, here, you don't get in this show until Frankie Valli
says okay.
Isn't that nuts? So this was kind of fun. And when I went in, you know, I'd had this really sort of whirlwind experience being cast in the show. It happened very fast. And in my experiences before, I'd never, you know, I'd never gotten a part quite like this in this manner. And so what happened was they said to me, you know, will you take the part? Will you do the show? And I said, absolutely. I'd be thrilled. It's an honor. And then I sat around waiting for them to make the offer official for like 2 weeks. Starting to really white knuckle it, wondering if maybe I misheard them, maybe there was some piece of information that I had missed out on. So 2 weeks after I had been told supposedly that I got the job, I got a phone call from the casting director who said, you know, look, I'm sure you're worried. Don't worry about it. You know, the part is yours. We're waiting for Frankie Valli and Bob Gaudio to sign off on you, and they're in Europe on tour right now. So I thought I was really impressed by that. The fact that these guys who, you know, are still performing and touring and, you know, out there doing their own thing, are so involved with this show that there's not a single cast member that gets put into one of these productions without, you know, first being okayed by them. That impressed me a great deal.
And this show, by the way, this show is not just here. It's on Broadway still. It's also going on. They're cast in many locations. I think one in Vegas as well, right?
We got seven companies. There's a Vegas production. There's a national tour. The Broadway production, as you had said. There's Australia. There's London, there's Toronto. I think there's talk of, you know, other productions worldwide. So it's really become, you know, quite an event. Just it's a real success story for not only for Frankie Valli and for Bob Gaudio, but for the producers of the show as well. And I think it's interesting to note that, you know, in their career, I may be misspeaking a little bit, but, you know, they had more top 10 hits, you know, than I think they were like second to Elvis and the Beatles until Mariah Carey came along. But until this show, they had never been nominated for a Grammy. And Bob Gaudio got his very first Grammy for the cast album of Jersey Boys. Which,
isn't that wild?
You know, it's kind of a sweet ending to the tale.
Yeah, so. Very, very much so. Listen, I can't imagine. I think if you live in Chicago, you've probably seen the show. But if you haven't, you at least know the story of the Jersey Boys. But just in case you don't, can you give us the succinct version of what is the quick story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons?
You know, it's an incredible story. It's a classic American sort of Cinderella story in the sense that these are four blue-collar, working-class guys from New Jersey sort of making ends meet however they can. You know, the character that I play spent years and years in and out of jail. Several of the band members did as well. And it's a story of these four guys sort of against all odds coming together, creating this music, and then reaching this incredible worldwide success. And then all of the further trappings issues that happen along with that. And the show itself, one of the things as an actor that's so much fun to get to do a show like this is it's really a play with music. It's really, you know, our choreographer was in the other day and he said it's a playsical, you know. It's more like an episode of The Sopranos than, say, you know, The Sound of Music. And because it happens to be about this band and it happens to follow the story of this music, you know, there are these great musical numbers. There's this great music that, you know, you all know and love. And, you know, for me, who I grew up as a Four Seasons fan, I learned things about the group that I had never known before. And
well, I think honestly, most people don't know. I mean, we kind of know Frankie Valli, but to be honest, this show introduced us to, I mean, Bob Gaudio is really the brains of the group.
Oh, he was a genius. He is a genius, a musical genius. And Nick Massey, who is the one member of the band that is no longer with us, he was, you know, sort of an idiot savant. He's responsible for those tight harmonies and that blend that they have. And their story is really inspiring, and it's a lot of fun to be a part of it.
And your character, Tommy DeVito, we've already said he's the bad guy, but tell us a little bit about why Tommy's the bad guy.
Well, I think Tommy's not necessarily the bad guy so much as he makes the wrong decisions at the right times, you know. And he's a real, you know, he was a tough guy. Like I said, these guys, they weren't, you know, educated in a traditional sense. And his, you know, I think Tommy DeVito's story is just trying to make ends meet, you know, by any means necessary. Unfortunately, those means aren't necessarily legal all the time. And I think what happened with him is, you know, the band got to a place where they sort of outgrew Tommy DeVito's methodology. You know, they got to a place where they, you know, maybe didn't need to show up with a 45 when they were collecting their money for the end of a performance. It's a crazy story about Tommy DeVito, but up until, you know, he was kicked out of the group, he would go to collect their take, you know, their take of the door, and he would open up a duffel bag, pull out a gun, just to make sure that they knew that they weren't, you know, who they were messing with, and then get, you know, the band's money and then leave. And he was just, you know, he was from a different era, and you know, it's
And I'm guessing for you, it's a delicious role.
Oh my God, absolutely. He has so much attitude and so much bravado, and it's so much fun, you know, because that's you know, when you play a character, I think if you're the person playing it, you know, you've got to see eye to eye with the character. You can't be condescending, you can't think you're better than the person. You can't see the ill, and you know what I really love about Tommy DeVito is, you know, his intentions couldn't be better. You know, he really is out for the band. You know, how he goes about getting things done, maybe not so much, but that's, like I said, he was just working with the tools that he had and what he knew, the world that he was a part of. You know, it was a rougher, like I said, less, a world that conformed less to legality than perhaps, you know, people normally would. But
and of course,
but yeah,
music,
it's a lot of fun.
The music of the show, Sherry, and Big Girls Don't Cry, and Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. I mean, and I know, and I've seen the show 5 times. I'm gonna see it one more time before it leaves. And when the group hits Sherry, the audience just goes berserko because we finally realize we know you guys.
Absolutely, and it's fun because, you know, I think sometimes the audience get a little frustrated. They wonder, where's the songs that we know? You know, the first, you know, half an hour of the show is really setting up who these guys are and where they come from. And, you know, they come from this tough part of town in New Jersey, and, you know, they're singing on street corners. They're hustling, you know. And so when you finally get to Sherry, not only is it the payoff of there's that song, there's their great hit that we know so well, but you also have that understanding of what it took for them to get to that moment where they were able to, you know, transcend, where they were able to sort of cross over and reach a real audience. And,
that's right.
You know, having seen where they've come from and what they've had to go through to get to that moment, I think, you know, gives that an extra special kind of heft and excitement. You know, you're really, the way this show moves, it moves so fast, but you really are along for the ride as an audience member. And so when you get to that moment, you feel that same sort of elation that they do it finally, you know, hitting. And it's just a lot of fun.
You got till January. Yeah, I was gonna say you got till January 10th to see it. But you know, I want to talk to you about, because life will go on, and you guys, you you may go back to being a sommelier one day, I suppose. I know you enjoy that, but you're also
absolutely
a musician. One of your colleagues, Michael Ingersoll, who plays Nick Massey, isn't it pitiful that I know who plays who in this show. But anyway, Michael's going to be performing up in Paramount, and you're going to be up there with him, right? When he does his shows,
We have. You know, it's funny. We all have our outside performances, our outside gigs, and it's a real testament to the four of us and how much we love each other, how well we get along. We really are like a band on stage and off. And the four of us perform. The four of us perform outside of Jersey Boys together on almost all of our nights off. We're working 7 days a week together, and Michael Ingersoll has been very productive in putting together this show that we do, that's full of doo-wop music and sort of big band standard kind of stuff. And, you know, we kind of have it's sort of our take on a Rat Pack type of thing. It's the four of us just on stage singing these great songs that you know and love from, you know, the 40s and 50s and 60s, and just having a great time with each other. And like you said, we're going to be doing a performance at the Paramount on the 16th and all throughout the Chicagoland area through to the end of February.
That's right.
And even though the show's closing, we're not going anywhere. And I also, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Well, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going. I want to get to that. And by the way, Ingersoll is going to be on the show in a few weeks, so we'll be talking to him. We'll bring you up again with him. But you also have a band called Reckless Place. It is rock and roll.
Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's not all rock and roll, but I want to talk about it, but I want to share a little of your music with my listeners. And so you mentioned that great Etta James song before, At Last. You auditioned for Jersey Boys with it. It's a song that Reckless Place sings as well, that you sing with Reckless Place. Let's let people listen to it. A little bit of Michael Cuneo. Michael, that's gory. I love it. You could have done that at Obama's inauguration.
I wish I had. No, I absolutely love that song, and it's fun. I'm very proud of it. I do it in the same key that Etta James sang it in, and like I said, I learned the song for my brother's wedding, and it's sort of become a standard for mine. You'll get to hear me performing it at the Paramount on the 16th. It's one of the numbers that I do with Michael Ingersoll, it's a standard for a reason. It's a timeless classic, and it's just an incredible song to get to wrap my lungs around.
But in fairness, you guys are a rock band, so tell me a little bit. I'm not going to play some of that heavy stuff you guys do.
Well, my band, which is separate from the Michael Ingersoll thing called, Reckless Place, and that's, you know, when I had, I've been singing and I've been working as a musician since I was 7 years old, and that's always been my great, great passion. And you know, it was my love of music and my ability to sing that led me to theater. But the sort of artistic backbone for me has always been music. And I have a tremendous passion for music from the late 60s and 70s and, you know, bands like Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and Three Dog Night. And so the band that I front and that I co-founded in New York is called Reckless Place, as you had said, and we just released our EP today. It's a limited release. You can find it on CD Baby, called Innocence is No Excuse.
Congratulations.
It will be released wide in 2 weeks, so anywhere music is sold online, you'll be able to find it in 2 weeks. And yeah, it's myself and a guy named Steven Dios. We met playing in a cover band, and we wanted to do something more. We wanted to do something original, and so we got together about 2 years ago and started writing these songs, and it's proven to be a lot of fun. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback and encouragement from all the right places, and so when the Jersey Boys came along, it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun to get to go. I felt like I knew a thing or two about what these guys go through and what it's like to hustle through my own experiences, through Reckless Place, and I think it was really a serendipitous that I ended up in a show about a band sort of coming off of the experiences that I have with my own band.
Yeah, and I want to play a little bit more. One of the songs you have on the, I think, on that album is called Saturday. Is that an original piece?
Yeah, all of the music for Reckless Place is original. And like I said, our goal when we were recording this album was to really go after something that was really a classic rock vibe. And this is a song that a lot of people say remind them of like a Rod Stewart tune. It's definitely lives in that area. It's certainly on the softer side for us, but you know, as artists and musicians, you know, we like to do the big, heavy, you know, riff laden stuff. But whenever we get an idea that we're, you know, passionate about, we don't say no to it. You know, and this song came about. It was a different kind of a song for us, but it's actually been a favorite among our fans, and it's a song that's the first song that we ever had played on the radio, which is a big deal. And,
well, you're about to have it played again on the radio, because as I listen to your music, it was one of my favorites as well. So I wanted to share that a little bit. Michael Cuneo and Saturday. Right, so there we go. A little bit of Saturday. Yeah, you know, it's a little mellow. It's not really hard stuff. I like that. I mean, that works for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's like you got to throw a bone for mom every now and then. You know what I mean? You know, she's my mom is an incredible woman. She raised four boys all by herself, and you know, couldn't be more supportive. And you know, I certainly know that my sensibility as a musician isn't necessarily. I think she wanted me to grow up and be Pavarotti. I wanted to grow up and be Robert Plant, and but you know, she's still very supportive, and I think that's one of her favorite songs, and it's nice that there's something on the album that she can get behind, you know, that's not going to peel the paint from the walls when you have it blasted.
Exactly. Now, after January 10th, you've got some dates coming up here. Are you remaining in Chicago? Are you going to become a Chicagoan, or do you go back to New York?
I'm going to go back to New York, but we're gonna stick around in Chicago for a little while. As I said, the four of us from Jersey Boys are going to be performing in the Chicagoland area throughout January and February. And then in February, I'm going to head back to New York, and also hoping to get my band out here, Reckless Place, and perform some dates around town. We're looking at a couple of venues out here. So once things slow down after the show closes, we'll be able to, you know, keep your eyes open and keep your eyes on us. We'll still be out here performing for a little while at least.
Do we expect, will we see you in a Jersey Boys cast anywhere else, or is that an unknown question?
You know, that is an excellent question, and one that I would love to be able to say yes to. I don't know the answer to it as of yet, so I will just say from your lips to God's ears.
So you'd like to do it.
I would love to. You know, honestly, this is one of those experiences, as I said, that has been so tremendously unique and so fulfilling on a number of different levels. And for me, I'm the newest cast member on the block, and I've been in the show performing this role since April. And so for us to be closing in January, I've gotten to do it for about 8 months, but I would certainly love to get to play this part again should the stars align. And you know, there are so many productions of this show. There are so many potential, you know, new productions of the show that I would like to think that it's not beyond the realm of possibility. And you know, if you've seen the show and if you've seen me in it, I think you can tell that I'm having an absolute blast, as we all are. So, you know, when you get to do something that you love and get to do something that's so fulfilling like this, you certainly don't ever want to let go.
I agree.
So.
Now, were you, by the way, Michael, were you a Frankie Valli Four Seasons fan going into this?
You know, I was. It's very interesting. My cousin, my whole music education is about 20 years behind. You know, I grew up, the first music that I really truly embraced as a teenager was Motown. You know, a huge fan of the Four Tops and the Temptations and also, you know, the Stax artists, Wilson Pickett and the Staple Singers. And you know, I didn't even discover Led Zeppelin until I was about 20, and I'm just now starting to get into the 90s. So as a teenager, I really went through a big oldies phase, and my cousin was responsible for introducing me to a lot of the Animals, the Kinks, the Who, and among them, the Four Seasons. And I remember we would go, you know, on Saturdays, we would go to thrift stores. I grew up in Seattle, so, you know, you go looking for a flannel. And
right.
And we'd listen to the Four Seasons records, and it's been a real, you know, I feel like I've come full circle by getting to be a part of this show because of that.
All right, Michael, I've got to wrap with you and wish you best, but since you know wine so well, give me your favorite wine.
You know, I'll give you my favorite grape because it's too hard to pin down. But you know, if you can find a decent Barolo that's anywhere from 10 to 15 years old, it's the style of wine. The grape is Nebbiolo. That's my favorite. If I had to be stuck on an island with one grape for the rest of my life, it'd be Nebbiolo.
You know, I think when you've got a Jersey boy who's also, you know, a rock star in Reckless Place, and he can tell you about wine and the grapes, man, you got it going on. You got it. Just you're a good guy.
Thanks, man. That's quite a compliment coming from me. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. Michael Cuneo, Reckless Place is the band. We can get the CD. Give us the website again. CD Baby, did you say?
It's available online at CD Baby, and it will be available at iTunes and Amazon.com in about 2 weeks and anywhere else online that music is sold. You can also visit our website, recklessplace.com, for information about all of that.
And I've been there. Lots of pictures and lots of fun stuff going on there as well. Reckless Place. Also, don't miss Michael as Tommy DeVito in Jersey Boys. You only have till January 10th to do it. Down at the Schubert. What's the latest name for that place? It's not the Schubert.
We now call it The Boat, the Bank of America Theater.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll change again in a year.
Oh, yeah, it'll be Dominic's by next week or something like that. Who knows? Michael Cuneo, I am going to see you one more time in that show before you leave town because I think you are just fantastic.
I look forward to it, Paul.
All right, thank you, sir.
So much. Thanks for having me.
All right, have a great show.
You do the same. Be well.
Bye-bye. All right, that's Michael Cuneo of the Jersey Boys and the band Reckless Place. When we come back, we're going in the Heights. It's a hot show in town. My guest, DeWitt Cooper. This is the Paul Lisnick Show here on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Are you an inventor? Or do you know an inventor who would like free inventor's information? Call InventHelp, one of America's largest invention companies, and learn how to get your free information. Call 1-800-619-9321. That's 1-800-619-9321. You'll learn how to attempt to patent your idea and submit it to industry. Learn how to get your free information by dialing 1-800-619-9321. That's 1-800-619-9321. A fee-based company.
Listen to Customer Service with Dorothy Tucker, Wednesday mornings at 10 on the Santina Jackson Show, only on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
The lights start my day.
love that show, In the Heights. It is currently at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Only here for a couple of weeks, so you don't want to miss it. And even my engineer, Ray Diaz, he was getting wild about that show right there, right? Because, yeah, it's got that little Latina flavor to it. Joining me now from the show In the Heights, DeWitt Cooper III. He is a member of the ensemble of this show that's already opened, as I said, at the Cadillac Palace. DeWitt, welcome to the Paul Listening Show here on The Talk of Chicago.
All right, thanks for having me.
Well, are you having fun with, I mean, In the Heights, a lot of energy, a lot of fun, great reviews. Talk to me about what it's like to be in it.
Wow. Well, it is a show about Latino culture in Washington Heights, New York, and it touches on so many different things. And for me, as an African-American being in this production, it's so familiar to me. It just reminds me of everything in my community back in Jacksonville, Florida. So anything that everybody can relate to, anything that's going on in this show, everybody knows the salon ladies that gossip, and everybody knows that the guy who has the corner store, and everybody knows that there's somebody on the street that has an abuela, which is in...
the grandmother, or the aunt.
The grandmother.
Yeah.
Right, right. So, and everybody knows that abuela knows everybody on the corner. Somebody knows somebody in this show that can relate to.
Well, I agree with it. And by the way, let's do a shout out to abuela, because it's played by Elise Santora. I've seen the show here. I was here on opening night. I've seen it in New York. And I was pleased to say when she walked on stage, I said she was in the Broadway cast. And she's fabulous.
Yes, she was. She's absolutely fantastic. On stage and off stage, her heart is just a pure gold. She's just a wonderful person altogether.
And her character is Abuela Claudia. I don't want to give too much away in terms of what goes on in the show, because it's bittersweet. There's moments of happiness. There's moments of sadness. Mm-hmm. But I will say that the narrator of the show, his name is Usnavi.
Usnavi, yes, played by Kyle Beltran.
And I want to tell you, and of course, when people are hearing me going, Usnavi, what kind of name is that? And I'd like to say where it comes from, but I think you give away one of the best lines in the show if I say it.
Yeah, I know. It's so tempting to give the story out a little bit, but
let's just say
you don't want to give too much away.
No, that's right. Let's just say his parents named him Usnavi, and it was a bit of perhaps an error on their part in terms of why they did it. But you got to see the show to understand where it comes from. It's a very funny moment.
It is, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
So, Kyle, you're working with Kyle Beltran, as you said, who's in the role of Usnavi. And tell me a little bit about the because, by the way, the original Usnavi was played by the man who wrote this show, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Exactly. And he was at our rehearsals the entire time, which was refreshing to see. And what's even more refreshing is that we get the directors to come back from different cities that we're in to work with the understudies and which is very uncommon thing in Broadway and things. Usually the understudies and all that kind of stuff, they happen to work with the stage managers, but we get the pleasure of working with the directors themselves.
And at first I thought, well, gee, I wonder why Lin isn't playing the role. And then I heard they're actually making a film of In the Heights, and he's starring in it.
Exactly. And this is new news to us. We've been hearing bits and pieces about it, but now some things are kind of concrete now, which is exciting to hear about.
Oh, no scuttlebutt for me then, huh?
No.
Now, I know you're from Jacksonville, and I know you have a dance group, right, that you started in Jacksonville. You're a dancer.
Yes, I am.
And I know, as I said, I've seen the show the other night. I know exactly who you are and see you on stage, and you move wonderfully on stage. But let me ask you, one of your first lines of this interview, you said, you know, growing up African-American and this station, VON, who have a very large African-American listening audience, and you tied it to sort of the experience of the Latina community. When I saw the show on Broadway, it was a much heavier Latina cast. Here, there are more African-Americans. In fact, actually, one of the lead roles was played by a white guy on Broadway, played by an African-American here. Tell me a bit about the theory going on here. There's obviously an effort to present a multiracial cast.
I think there are efforts to be more universal, I think, is what's important to mention that. They are making changes, and changes are being made all the time on Broadway. And this particular show is you don't get to see much of this. And so when these kind of things come around, you really have to take advantage of it as much as you can. So I think what In the Heights is doing is saying that this is not just about a certain community or certain people, but it is a show and a story that everybody can dive into and that everybody can get something out of. And the way that they're trying to do that is being more inclusive of the people that are in the cast, which I think is very important for other young African-Americans to see people of their color that look like them up there on the stage, and knowing that dreams come true, dreams are possible, and that, you know, all things are possible no matter what.
And that's right. And of course, and In the Heights, which, by the way, I should say, it won the 2008 Tony Award for Best Musical. So this is no slock show that came over from Broadway. This was the Tony Award winner for Best Musical. And it is about hope, and it's about change, and it's about dreams, and it's about pressures.
Yeah. Yeah. The pressures of everyday life, you know, and you can see in the show where some businesses work and some don't. The pressures of being in a community that has problems, and then showing you how to positively and effectively deal with them, and how you allow yourself to fit into that picture, and the decisions that you make are ultimately up to you.
That's what makes it happen. I want to play a little bit more music from this. Now, admittedly, a lot of the music from this is pretty, you know, it's high. There's actually a lot of rap in this. There's a lot of that going on. But I'm an old fogey, and so I want to play one of my favorite numbers from this, which is probably atypical to what the music is in the show. But you know this song as soon as you hear it. I'm going to ask you a little bit about it. Let's play a little bit of Piragua.
Okay.
Qué calor, qué calor, qué calor, qué calor. Piragua, piragua, new block of ice. Piragua, 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 so sweet and nice. Piragua, tengo de mango, tengo de parcha, de piña y de fresa. Tengo de china, de limón, de pesco y de peseta.
It's a great song, and I just asked my engineer here, Ray Diaz. I said, "Do you understand it? It's Spanish." He said, "No, not really." but it's—I'd love to say it's a deep song. It's just a guy selling some flavored waters, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's just, you know, it's that other business, private business on your street corner where maybe in the African-American community, somebody's maybe selling drinks, water, soda out of a cooler, or in the Latino community in New York and Washington, New Heights, the Piragua guy is selling snow cones. And that's basically what a Piragua is. It's a snow cone, and this time of year, when In the Heights, it's hot, and so many different things have happened in this show to where the Piragua is so important to the community.
And by the way, the guy that plays, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, who plays that role of the sales, do you know his name?
We're talking about David Beta.
Okay. Was he also on Broadway?
No, David was not. He's actually new to the show as well.
Okay. He sure looks like the guy that played the role on Broadway. And
he's very similar to the guy that's on Broadway.
Yeah. So it's almost a little bit tricky. And talk to me about, you know, the show also won for Best Choreography and by Andy Blankenbuehler, who is the choreographer of the show. But I want to ask you about that because, first of all, you are a dancer. You have your own, you know, dance troupe. And so I think it's fair enough to talk to you about choreography in this show because there's a lot of cool stuff going on. Tell me about it.
Well, the choreography in this show is so intricate. It's not your typical, you know, the typical Broadway show where you'll see dialogue, you hear dialogue and see a song happen, then all of a sudden a dance, big group dance number happens. Well, in this particular show, the choreography has been structured in a way that it supports the story a little bit more. And it allows the audience to kind of go on a journey and see how people's lives are being affected. And that's how important the choreography is, because without this style of choreography, I don't think it would have worked any other way. I don't think it would have been as a popular show as it is now. The choreography requires you know, you to take a deeper look into the community in Washington Heights. It's just that much of a big deal.
And it's flavor. I mean, there is many of the dances. There's the Latin flavor to the moves. I mean, so again, we see the culture in every way, the music, the dance, the lines. Do you find, and I'm just curious this, you know, especially here in Chicago, we've got there's standard group of people who are subscribers, so they're going to see everything in line.
Uh-huh.
And when I first saw the show on Broadway, the heavy use of rap in it, I thought, okay, I thought it was cool, but what kind of reaction do you get to older folks for whom that, you know, who knows what they think about it?
Well, you know, it varies from city to city. The thing is that... if you're not into hip hop, and which is what rap is, it's Lin-Manuel really grew up very heavy into hip hop, and you know, people like Run DMC, and so those are people that are his idols. So when he wrote this, wanted to write something that he was familiar with, something that he knew about, and the use of it is so demanding. To speak to an audience, 21st century audience today, you have to kind of go, you have to know your audience and know who you want to speak
That's
to
right.
and know who you're trying to get to. So when other people who aren't very familiar with it come into play, they have to sit back for a second and give it a chance and see and hear what the lyrics are saying and see what the story is saying before they make a judgment about it.
And now, I agree with you, and you do get used to it. Let's play a little more music for folks. This is a number called The Club, and I'll give you a little bit. It's a little different than Piragua, so let's a little bit of a different flavor from the music. Here's The Club.
Damn, this is nice. I really like what they've done with the lights. So the hot club in Washington Heights. You might be right, this music's tight. Yo, did I mention that you look great tonight? Because you really do.
Ooh, snobby, relax.
Relax, get relaxed, I'm relaxed. So you've been here before. I don't know why I get so busy with the store. And cada día it's a brand new chore. My arms are sore, no time for the dance floor. But maybe you and me should hang out some more. I'm such a dork, but
let's go get a drink.
Something sweet.
You know me, a little bit of cinnamon.
Pepa Vanessa.
Ah, you know, you just feel it. The rhythm, the music, the dance. And you get to play in that song, DeWitt. Eight times a week.
Oh, it's that particular number is probably, I think I can speak for all of the cast members involved in that particular number, that it is probably the most challenging and yet the most fun every night.
And we
be able
see
to walk
it.
On stage every night and be able to do that as my job. I can't ask for anything better right now.
Yeah. You know, by the way, we haven't really talked a lot about plot here. I mean, other than you've said, it's Washington Heights, but it's everybody's neighborhood. It's every character. We all live with them. But there is a bit of plot to this as well. Can you kind of summarize the plot of In the Heights?
Oh, wow.
I mean, it involves a lottery ticket, a lottery winner. I won't say who won it because that's a bit of a surprise in the show, I think,
yeah.
as well. But again, I guess the plot is loose as it just wraps around this concept of dreams and pressures
yeah,
and trials.
Yeah, it is a show. The plot wraps around dreams and hopes and family and just sort of like finding your place and you know, knowing that, you know, where you come from is just as important as anywhere else. And it's about home, and it's about loving where you come from and loving who you are.
And, you know, what a great Christmas. It's going to be playing at the Cadillac Theater until January 3rd, so you're here just through the holidays. I'm assuming no shows on Christmas and New Year's?
Right. No Christmas Eve, no Christmas show, and no New Year's Day show. But we are running full force.
Oh, absolutely. Now, by the way, you're from Florida, so Chicago's not your home. So what are you doing on Christmas and New Year's? This is a pretty great city to be in for the holidays, but your family's not here. What are you going to do?
Well, you know, I'll be doing a little conference call with the family. And
okay.
The cast itself, we're having a little get-together. So, and some of the parents of a couple cast members are going to be down. So they're going to throw us a nice little party. And a little dinner, and everything should be good.
Well, you can all come over to my house if you're willing to perform and sing a little bit.
I think we might take you up on that offer.
It might be fun. Hey, you yourself, I know you've got your MFA in dance. You've appeared in Ain't Misbehaving and Anything Goes. You've done some pretty classic songs important to the culture.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important that, you know, as I venture off into discovering new things, new shows, new musicals, that I keep in mind that there were people who came way before me, who set the ground for me to do what I'm doing today. So, you know, part of me, you know, paying back what I've done is that understanding that these shows still exist and that we have to give credit to them we have to give credit to what came before us, because without that, In the Heights wouldn't be possible, or the shows that are coming around, like The Color Purple, wouldn't be possible if we didn't acknowledge those things.
That's right.
So we really have to, you know, keep our eyes open and understand that, you know,
I agree. By the way,
more to life than what we're doing.
Yeah, Color Purple was just recently here again. I got to interview Fantasia in that show, and I love that show. What a fabulous show.
It's a fantastic show.
It was in a miserable venue, by the way. It was in the Erie Crown, which is a terrible place to put on a musical like that. But but you're not. You're in the Cadillac Palace Theater.
In the Cadillac Palace.
Till January 3rd. It's a pretty gorgeous theater, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely gorgeous. Probably one of the best ones we've been in so far, I believe.
Yeah, well, and probably one of the best you're going to be in, because it's just one of the jewels of Chicago. You're here till January 3rd. We're going to go to break, and I'm going to play a little more In the Heights as we go out, because I really want people to think about it again. It's a great Christmas gift, just such high energy. And I'll tell you, the ending, so darn sweet. So darn wonderfully sweet.
It definitely draws you in.
And when you can make graffiti a sweet moment, you've accomplished something. Around this city, graffiti ain't good stuff usually, but in this show, graffiti does some pretty good stuff.
He does fantastic stuff, absolutely.
All right, DeWitt Cooper, we sure appreciate your joining us here on the show. Have a great, great time in Chicago in the Heights. And we'll see you next time you're back. All right, my friend?
Thank you so much for having me.
Happy holidays, DeWitt. In the Heights, Cadillac till January 3rd. God bless you, too. We'll be right back. This is the Paul Lisnick Show here on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Dr. Charles Z. Hayes and the Cosmopolitan Church of Prayer can be heard on WVON 1690 every Sunday from 5 to 6 p.m. The public is invited to attend service at 842 East 65th Street. For more information, call 773-324-5400. That's 773-324-5400.
And welcome back to the Paul Lisnick Show here on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. You know that music, don't you? Here they are, That's it, The Addams Family. The Addams Family, that was a great TV show. It is now a musical playing down at the Oriental Theater downtown. You want to talk about a show that's been anticipated in this city for a very long time. This is it. We've been waiting for so long for this show to get here. Nathan Lane as Gomez Addams. Bebe Neuwirth, who you know her from Cheers and so many other shows, as Morticia Addams. It's a phenomenal cast. But one of my favorite characters in the show, if there's a narrator in the show, it's him. And it is, you remember him from the TV show, Uncle Fester. Joining me now is Kevin Chamberlain, who plays Uncle Fester in the musical version of The Addams Family. Kevin, welcome to the Paul Lisnick Show.
It's great to be here.
I appreciate it. There's so much to talk about, but first let me introduce you to our guests. You are no stranger to Broadway. You did a phenomenal job in The Ritz. You were in Chicago, Dirty Blonde, Tony and Drama Desk nominations for Seussical. You love the Broadway stage, don't you?
I do. It's part of, I feel like I'm part of that community more so than any other one. I kind of grew up there.
But here you are with a pre-Broadway tryout in Chicago. The Addams Family's going to New York in March. And I know Nathan Lane has shared with you his experience in The Producers. There's no better city to try a show out in than Chicago. Let me ask you if you agree with that. And if so, or if not, why?
Yeah, well, it's an incredibly discerning audience in Chicago here. I was joking with Nathan the other day how it's all going to be downhill after The Producers. It was such a crazy reception that they got here. It's almost 10 years ago. So we have a lot to live up to, and the audiences have been incredible, and they've taught us a lot.
That's great. And, of course, the show, I've seen the show twice already, and changes even in the show since I've seen it. So let me ask you now, is it continued to be a work in progress? In other words, when it opens on Broadway, different from what we're seeing now?
Yes. We go back into rehearsals for a month. So we're it's going to be constantly a work in progress until probably a week before we open.
Wow. All right. Folks who are fans of the TV show or fans of the movies with Raul Julia, let's be up front and let's be honest about it. That's not what this musical is based on.
No, the inspiration was going back to the original New Yorker cartoons when our creative team and the producers went to the estate of Charles Adams originally to ask for the rights. I guess there were a couple different producers looking to snag the rights, and they presented their their projects and how they saw the Addams Family, and our producer sort of won the contest by saying we're going to go back to the original drawings and make this a show about family.
And in fact, the drawings, which were at that time in the New Yorker single panel drawings, it was not a cartoon strip that played out from day to day. And in many ways, this show is sort of a merging of many of those panels. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, and some of them are directly quoted. But some, you know, you look back at them now, there's a wonderful coffee table book that just came out of the entire collection. And some of them you sort of scratch your head and go, I don't really get it. And they had some, they were sometimes political. They were sometimes very commenting on current events. I think that's one of the reasons why the writers have thrown in a little contemporary references in our show.
Right. First of all, you've got Nathan Lane and B.B. Newworth. I mean, they really are Gomez and Morticia. I mean, they really inhabit it. Nathan has this little Spanish dialect thing going on. And you got to be honest, when he's on stage, he just takes over, doesn't he?
He does. He's
in a good
way. A force of nature. he is one of the most inspirational comic actors I've ever worked with. And we've worked together a couple times, so been fortunate to watch him create characters.
Yeah, you know, I interviewed him, and I asked him. I had a note in my notes about who I thought he reminded me, who to me he is today. And I asked him who his inspiration was, and he stumbled with it for a bit, and then he gave me the same name that I tossed to him. I'm just going to challenge you. Who do you think is Nathan Lane today is of the past?
I would say Bert Lahr.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I hadn't thought of that. Actually, it was Gleason. Because Nathan Lane can bring you to tears. He can bring you to smiles and laughs. To me, the way Gleason could. And when I asked him about that and he thought back to who his inspiration was, his answer ultimately was Gleason. But Bert Lahr's really interesting. Also in the cast, Jackie Hoffman's been on this show. She's doing a one-woman show in the city, too. She plays Grandma, not Grandmama, because you couldn't get the rights to that name.
Yeah, the extra M.A. Isn't that crazy?
And I have to ask you, is she, in the two times I've seen the show, is she improvising her shtick on that stage from time to time?
They have given her one little section where she can do anything she wants. Yeah.
I'm guessing that's in the dinner number of Full Disclosure.
Yes.
Because when you see it, you look at the other cast members, and it's hard to tell. You know, you sort of look in amazement, but it's almost hard to keep from laughing, right? Because you never know what she's going to do.
It becomes like the Carol Burnett show, yeah.
You're all Harvey Cormans.
That's right. Right.
Talk to me about Uncle Fester. Uncle Fester, he has a love affair in this show as well. It's a little bit different. And, you know, Kevin, you have actually some of the most beautiful music in the show.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think Andrew has written me two great numbers, and the love song to the moon. It's called, a song called "Moon and Me," which is a bit of a theatrical coup.
Yeah.
I mean, the original concept for it really hasn't changed since the very beginning, which was using these Japanese no theater techniques, where puppeteers are dressed all in black and are manipulating different objects.
I know you were not going to give it away. You yourself, let's just say you yourself float across the stage, and I'm staring. I'm kind of guessing what you're doing, but it's very well done because I really don't know for sure how you're doing it.
Yeah, and we're not going to give it away either.
how about off the air? Will you tell me secretly off the air?
I'll just say this. There are no wires.
Okay, yeah, okay, there you go. And of course, Uncle Fester kind of tells the story, really, as it goes through. He's the narrator who shows up. This is about Wednesday Addams, the daughter, getting engaged. And so we get to meet the Beinekes. This is a family that existed, I think, only in the cartoons. We never saw them anywhere else.
Well, actually, there were outsiders that were drawn, but they were never named the Beinekes per se. The creative team came up with that conceit, sort of. I think their model was sort of like you can't take it with you.
Gotcha.
The Kaufman and Hart play. So this wacky family it invites outsiders in, and so they see themselves through the eyes of an outsider.
And of course, you're up there with, you know, and they're played by Terry Mann and Carolee Carmello. And when I interviewed Carolee, she's known. I've always heard of her as the strongest voice on Broadway. That seemed to take her by surprise when she heard it. But what amazing voices! And Terry Mann from Beauty and the Beast. This is one of the most incredible casts ever assembled for a huge show.
It really is. It really is. And luckily, we've all known each other over the years. I mean, we all sort of came to New York and to the Broadway scene in the 80s, and we've been around for a while. So it's really nice to have that shorthand with other actors.
By the way, you've got a long resume, but I have to ask you, I love Nip Tuck. Who were you in Nip Tuck?
I was in the very first episode after the pilot. I was a psychologist that they hired to screen people.
Oh, I remember. Okay, yeah. There
and
you
go. I got
go.
Fired. The character, not
exactly right. Not you. You have to be having a great time. Are you enjoying Chicago itself? What have you? I know that Nathan's hanging over at Pettirino's a lot. What's become a favorite for you?
Paisano's. Okay. I like Paisano's pizza. Sadly, we kind of have been in rehearsal so much that I kind of go from the theater to where I'm staying, and I order in from Paisano's a lot.
which is a good one. And by the way, the show is you're only here until
January 10th.
January 10th, and then you're off, which is really unfortunate. I understand. You know, I have to tell you, it's really tough to get tickets for this show. It's almost sold out, but people still can get seats, right?
Yes, I think the matinees are more tickets available for matinees than the weekend performances. If you look more towards the weekday 7:30 shows, you can grab a seat.
All right. I also had a question from somebody who, when I told him you were going to be on, and so he actually had a question for you, and I said I would ask it. And the question is, do you shave your head or are you really bald?
Well, I have that sort of ring around the side, but I've never shaved it before, and so I have had to shave that, and that's quite an experience the first time you do it.
But for Uncle Fester, you have to.
A little terrifying, yeah.
I love it.
But better that than having to put on a fake wig cap every day.
I'm with you on that. Kevin Chamberlain, you know what? We're out of time, and I wish we were not, because there's just so much to talk about. The Addams Family down at the Cadillac Palace through January 10th. What an incredible show on its way to Broadway. I love the fact that you people come here before Broadway, and I'll look forward to seeing you. I'm sure I'll come see it on Broadway again as well. I hope you're having a great time in Chicago and a great time in the show.
We're having a wonderful time, and I hope everyone gets a chance to see the show.
All right, I agree with you. And please give my best to everybody, especially Ms. Carmello, if you would. And I will hopefully see you soon.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. Kevin Chamberlain, Uncle Fester from the Addams Family.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
And that is what we want to wish for all of you now as Christmas is so close at hand. My thanks to all my guests today, Kevin Chamberlain of the Addams Family, DeWitt Cooper in the Heights, Michael Cuneo, Jersey Boys, and my guests from the first hour, including Philip Jackson, Executive Director of Black Star Project, and all of our holiday tip guests. I wish for all of you a very healthy and happy and prosperous Christmas season. We'll be with you next week, so we'll talk about the new year coming up. My sincere thanks as well to Ray Diaz for making it all happen for me in today's show. And to all of you, this is the Jacksons wishing you what I wish you. A very Merry Christmas. This is the Paul Lisnick Show here on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.